This is the real weepy and like tragic part of the story beginning, oh my brothers and only friends.
I'm in for four potential getaway drivers. Go.
No!
But I was told that I could listen to the radio at a reasonable volume.
No!
Excuse me, we have a little bit of a hurry.
Hang on, Voltaire.
It's yet another long series of perversions in an attempt to avoid responsibility.
Do you hear that?
Hear what?
That noise, it's like a collapsing noise. Almost as though the collective weight of last week's absence single-handedly devastated the hearts and minds of millions, and the depression our fans have sunk into has created a chasm almost incapable from. Oh, friends, don't worry, we're here to lift you up. Who are we, you ask? A veritable two-man rogues gallery, equipped with scabbards made of words and satchels filled with golden phraseology. As for your host, I'm Chris View, podcasting from Detroit.
And I'm Tanner Higgin, podcasting from Los Angeles. And
today we're bringing you another episode of This Just In, a completely patchwork podcast. Fuck, I messed that up. Conceptualized seconds... See, this doesn't work now, because here I am, my next line is conceptualized seconds before hitting record, but if that were the case, I wouldn't be reading off this fucking script. God bless it.
All right, do you want to restart it?
Again. No, no, don't restart it. It's not even worth it anymore.
What a great beginning to this podcast.
Well, let me just finish it up. A completely patchwork podcast conceptualized seconds before hitting record, but executed with the precision of preparation. Today's topics include Google search strings of hilarious performances, the Sepricon Sci-Fi Channel, and E3. But first, Tanner, do you want to give our listeners and hopefully our readers a summation of where we're at with issue 2?
Well, we got the cover nailed down, which was a huge, huge obstacle that we overcame.
Yeah, it looks
so
awesome.
If you were thinking about submitting a cover, don't. Because you've already been beaten before you even began.
All I can say is that the look of the cover, it's got this guy is such a good artist. It's got a Tim Burton-esque feel to it.
Yeah.
Characters who have very long bodies. We kind of, when we told him what we wanted, we basically said that we kind of wanted a 19th century French salon type, you know, a place where people are exchanging ideas type place, and he provided a hit. I mean, he got everything down that we wanted. So
yeah, so we've got that. We're sorting through all the submissions we got slowly, but I mean it's happening. Chris's interview's coming together, yeah. So we're finally starting to see the pieces fall into place. I mean, I wouldn't say it's going to come out in May, as we originally had predicted, but it's definitely coming out this summer, and it will definitely be good. I can promise you that.
Yeah, the wait will be worth it. I mean, one of the great things about doing this is just getting to read a lot of different submissions, but, you know, one of the surprises that came, and I don't know if he listens to our podcast, but Matt Dennison, he was featured in issue 1. He wrote the short story, The Man Remembers, and I will say... that this issue, hopefully he received the email before he hears this, if he does listen, but he is accepted in this issue because he is such a good writer. I like his stuff.
Yeah, so. he's one of the means as children now. He's one of our circle.
He's part of our arsenal. I'm almost ready to ask him to help out because we need help, but whatever. So the first topic, E3.
Yeah, this year I was particularly excited about E3 because it's one of those years, it comes by, you know, every about 3 years or so when all the consoles are sort of finally battling and showing what they're made of. And I guess this was the first one where the next gen, PlayStation 3, Xbox 360, and Nintendo Wii really, you know, were showing actual content from their games. So I was excited to see how everything panned out. And G4 had, you know, three-hour live coverage days. I watched a substantial portion of it, hoping to see some stuff that really impressed me. And I was just hugely disappointed.
Really?
I mean, Before the coverage, I was a big fan of the Wii because I think they're doing something daring. They're trying to innovate rather than just, you know, impressing people with technology. So I was excited to see what they might be doing with their controller. But all they had were their same properties, the Mario, the Zelda, which, okay, they're good, but, you know, you got to have some third-party support. Their third-party support was horrendous. It was like some trucking game where you're driving in a truck, you know, just dumb, boring, non-innovative garbage. They have no third-party support. So, you know, the Nintendo's going to be fine as a gimmick, but it's not going to be a great system. PlayStation 3, of course, you know, had their same old garbage, you know, sequel games. Same with Xbox 360. It's all the same crap, and I'm just totally depressed as to the state of the gaming industry. And I've got to say, I think the only thing, you know, that really impressed me was Will Wright Spohr, who he's the creator of The Sims and all the Sim games. He's like one of the only people in the games industry who is intelligent and is doing something different, and I think this game's going to be something really cool. And Gears of War, which is for the Xbox 360, which is a shooter game made by Cliffy B, who's sort of a rock star designer. And what he's doing with Gears of War is, I mean, it's got the great graphics, but it's a shooter, but he's sort of innovating in that you use cover mainly. It's not like a run and gun. You run, he calls it, I think, a pop and stop or something like that, where you're constantly using cover to your advantage, and there's a dynamic camera system that when things happen, the camera actually has its own AI where it's focusing in on what it thinks is most important, and it seems to be really cool. Other than that, ugh, horrible, horrible stuff.
It's funny, because remember last year this time we were watching E3, and the Xbox 360 had that douchebag guy with the bald head who's wearing a suit jacket and laying around on stage.
Yeah, trying to be really cool.
Be hip.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, this year, I haven't been hearing much in regards to Xbox 360. And even, you know, what I've been focusing on was the Wii, and it's for those same reasons where it is an innovative, the controller technology that they're trying to bring out. It seems like it could be cool, but at the same time, it's almost too interactive. When I play a game, I like getting into it to where, like, you know, maybe I'm in the living room and I'm playing and, you know, whoever's over the house hears me screaming at the screen, or like I'm going, whoa, whoa! You know, that can happen without me having to have the controller that they're presenting, because basically their controller is a set of nunchucks, and you're supposed to like point the laser at the screen and do kinds of all kinds of stuff. And one of the games that did intrigue me with this was, I can't think of the name of it now, but it's like a sword game. It's like a samurai type game. Not samurai, but basically, like, you use a gun, but at one point during the video,
Red Steel, it's called.
Yeah, but what I'm most intrigued about is, okay, so if I'm getting in a sword fight in a video game at this stage in video game technology, at what point does the video game give up on me being in the sword fight and finally say, you know, this guy sucks, let's just give it to him? Or can I indefinitely continue fighting in a sword fight with somebody? Because at some point, when you're wielding the controller, it looks as though you're going to be doing real-time blocks and then jabs with your sword. But if that's the case, technically, I could run into this guy and kill him in, like, one slice, or, you know, do you know what I'm saying? Or am I able to just kind of sit there and just flick my wrist, and it'll do the same things? It's just a matter of when the sensor goes past the TV. It's not the style in which I'm fighting. Do you know what I'm saying? So
yeah, it's
at
gonna
some
be...
point, will the game automatically put the sword to the guy's throat as they show in the screen, in the screening of it? Or is that something I physically will be doing? Because it's kind of cooling, and that's what they're showing on screen. But I just don't know the capabilities of the games in conjunction with the controller. You know what I'm saying?
There's a lot to be said for how functional a controller is. You know,
yeah.
It might just be that the game's doing a lot of things for you, and you're just sort of moving your wrist.
Yeah,
and then, like, oh, all of a sudden I've got him on the ground. You know, and that's not very interactive at all.
No, not at all. I mean, technically, under this controller, what I would hope is that I could indefinitely have a sword fight with somebody. It could take hours for me to master.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. Your imagination is always going to exceed the possibilities of the game.
Well, other than that, in terms of an E3 roll-up, I don't have cable TV, so I haven't seen G4 Tech TV stuff on it, but... You know, it seems like everything that was going to be said was said last year. You know, you and I made fun of it last year. The Xbox 360 came out and tried to be the hip new system. PS3 was the system that nobody knew what the hell. All we saw were cinema scenes. And then Nintendo was the babbling idiot. We saw what those two had and was like, hey, wait a second, guys. I got stuff, too. I got stuff. Check this out. And then they brought out, like, this, what looked like a sleek new vibrator for women. You know, was their new controller and all that stuff.
It's just, whatever. I mean, it's a disastrous situation for video gaming right now. Of course, fanboys all over the world are eating everything up. But at some point, people have got to wake up out of the matrix and realize that nothing new is ever being done. It's just better graphics on the same old garbage.
Yeah.
I mean, at some point, people have got to recognize this.
One good thing that I hope... Well, all right, I can't say it for sure because maybe they did pump this year, but Nintendo last year, because they didn't have much of a product to sell, their big thing was that dog-raising game where you had, like, a dog, and you raised it, and that was, like, all it was. So hopefully this year they didn't, like, sell that angle and be like, but look, you know, Pound Puppy on our portable Tiger electronics game type thing, you know? That was their big thing last year. Because they didn't have a product. And this year, I don't even know if I can say, honestly, that they still have a product. I don't know.
See, I think I'll buy a Wii just because I think it's going to be $200. And for $200, I think it's kind of entertaining just to mess around with the controller. Get Mario, get Zelda, blah, blah, that's fine. But no way am I paying $600 for PlayStation 2, where it's computer games or PlayStation 2 games with better graphics. I don't care. I don't need that.
That brings up a really good point, because if you look at Nintendo in the past few times that they brought stuff out, the big problem is that, yeah, it's $200, but you're gonna get the initial thrust of games, and within 6 months, you're not going to have much new coming out for it.
Yeah, that's not going to change. That's definitely not changing.
So what you're paying $600 for with the PS3 or the Xbox 360 is the dependability. You know that when they design a Medal of Honor game, the worst version of it is going to be for the Nintendo platform. And then you're going to get a one that's heavy on graphics for the Xbox 360, and then you're going to get the middle of the road, basically, for the PS3, unless they've changed shit. You know, maybe they did, and now PS3 will usurp 360 in the graphics department. But essentially, you're good to go game-wise. You're going to have enough RPGs coming out. You're going to have, if you like shoot 'em up games or if you like racing games, those are all going to be out for the Xbox 360 and the PS3, but the Nintendo Wii, it's a crapshoot. You're going to get Zelda at first, you're going to get a Metroid game, probably, you're going to get a Super Mario Brothers game, and then a Super Monkey Ball and a few party game type things, and then it's after that, who knows what the hell is going to be designed for that system.
Mm-hmm.
Good luck to Nintendo Wii. I mean, I do wish them a lot of luck, because you hit it on the head. They're the only innovative system right now. Everyone else is just upping their graph. Like, the PS3 and all that is basically like having two, like, GeForce 6800 Ultras in a computer, you know? It's like, you can buy that for $600 if you want, so, and put it in your PC. When I downloaded Firefox, which I recommend everyone download because it is the ultimate browser as far as I'm concerned, I love it. But with Firefox, if you download the extension called Customize Google, right now I think they're up to version 0.48, but I'm only running 0.43. But if you do Customize Google and check the option in there to use Google Suggest, which means that it suggests words while you're typing them in the browse field. Basically, what'll happen is you start typing something, type your own name, and if like I am, you will have your name pop up, and it will tell you how many people have actually searched that recently. And it's an estimate; it's not an exact figure. But for instance, where this came up in my everyday life is, I often will ask questions in the Google Browse field because I want a quick answer. So I'll type an open-ended question like, you know, how do I, or what kind of RAM is best for my computer, something like that. But when you start typing what kind of, like, things come up like, what kind of dog are you? And 11.2 million people have searched that. Or what kind of person are you? 31.7 million people have searched for what kind of person are you. And after a while, you get these really silly ones when you start asking these open-ended questions.
See, I think it's not how many people have searched. I think that's how many results are for it, isn't it?
Are you sure? Oh, it says results. Yeah, that's what it is. Okay, so that's the results. So apparently these people, there's 29.7 million people who have somewhere you can find how do you kiss, or here's a great one, even better than how do you kiss, because obviously that's the tame version, but 66 million people, nearly triple of those people who asked how do you kiss, asked how do you make out.
One step greater.
Yeah, because we all know kissing is baby stuff, but making out is, that's first base, dude.
I like, if you type in how do you, it gives you, you know, like maybe a dozen things, and it sort of gives you a barometer of our culture. Mm-hmm. And it's how do you get that lonely? How do you tie a tie? How do you know if you're pregnant? How do you talk to an angel? By Richard Marx. How do you know if you're pregnant? How do you kiss? How do you get AIDS? And how do you make out? There seems to be a general trend here about sex, kids, and Richard Marx.
And then if you type in, like, who is the... Because what if you're stupid and you don't know who the president is? President. But instead you type in who is the, and the first thing is who is the Stig? I don't know who the Stig is, but 2.17 million people have that on their site.
Maybe they meant Sting.
I don't know who is the Sting, though. The Sting is a Paul Newman film, if I recall correctly. But then you have, like, who is the teacher of the enrichment class in... That's an open-ended question. Enrichment class... What? I don't even know. But 7,890 results are for that one. But then you go down, the fourth from the bottom is the best one, because this is the question of all time, and I think this is one everyone should be asking, but it's, who is the Antichrist? 1,090,000 people are actually saying themselves, who is the Antichrist?
No, now click on it and see what the number one result is.
George W. Bush is the Antichrist.
Don't you love that? That all those people that are typing that search result in—that's their number one.
Wow! Ask me an open-ended question. Just start with something: who, what, when, where, why, how. Like,
where do I? Maybe
where do I? Okay, this is one actually. This is interesting because I kind of like this. When you do where do I? One, and this is something that comes up with other how-to questions, like how do I, but one of them is get a passport. I think that's interesting. A lot of people are thinking of travel. A lot of people are looking for ways to get passports, which are cool. But then you have these open-ended questions like, where do I begin?
I can picture so many different situations where somebody's like sitting with like a bottle of scotch sitting next to their computer, like naked and like vulnerable, and just typing, where do I begin, Google?
Well, the best is that, like, there's where do I begin, which has 78.4 million results. But then you have... Go, if you look down, where do I go? 556 million results. I don't know where the hell you go, man, and I'm not putting you go. You go to hell. The biggest one, or the second biggest one, no, third biggest one is, where do I live? Which, if you don't know where you live, you're an absolute idiot because somehow you got the internet plugged into your house. And then there's this interesting question, where do I come from? Are you asking, you know, where do babies come from?
Well, yeah, maybe
wondering what your ethnicity is.
Maybe these are like 5-year-olds, sort of.
So, all right, let's just do one more for posterity's sake. Let's see.
Love how Google has taken up this position in our culture of just being the ultimate repository of knowledge. And all Google really is guys like us spouting bullshit and getting on the search engines with it. You know, they're coming to us for answers about where do I begin.
Shoot, think of one more really quick.
I just did whatever happened to.
Predictability.
I was hoping that would be it, but what I love is the third result for whatever happened to is whatever happened to Corey Haim.
Wow.
Poor Corey.
Anyway, it's a neat feature, and it's at WinLine. It's always humorous when you're typing something in, and you think you've had it all figured out, and then that pops up in your browser field, and it always gives me a laugh. The next topic is something you brought up, and I didn't really get to read much on it, but it has to do with our favorite show, probably almost of all time. And what is that, Tanner? What's that show that we love?
Yeah, it's just recently announced that Battlestar Galactica, which I think every Battlestar Galactica fan can agree, we don't get enough of it.
No.
and the wait between seasons is killing me, and every time it kills me.
Summer.
So they finally announced an actual companion series, which will be a prequel called Caprica, and it's going to be on the Sci-Fi Channel, and it's going to be set 50 years prior to the events of Battlestar Galactica, and it's focusing on the lives of two families, which will be the Adamas, which are, I guess, the sort of family of both the commanders Adama, and another family called the Greystones, and it's going to be sort of during the development of Cylon technology. And, you know, initially you'd think, like, oh, God, this is going to be horrible, but it's being produced by the same people that produced Battlestar Galactica, so you got to believe it's going to be decent, or at least it's going to be enough, and I hope they do this, where, Battlestar Galactica will have its season, and then after that, Caprica will have its season. So it'll be a great way to sort of bridge that gap, I'm thinking.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. I guess my biggest thing is I'm not quite sure what kind of story there is, because, you know, for me, with Battlestar Galactica, the story really does begin. The meat of the story begins when the Cylons return after the war. Technically, the ending of Caprica, we already know it. The ending is going to be, you know, I don't know who they are, but, you know, the ultimate ending of that series is going to have to be the culmination of, you know, Adama, you know, he's on the Galactica, and the Cylons come back to attack, because we can have it follow them through early Cylon technology, and if this show lasts several seasons, I guess technically we'll see them in the first Cylon War when the Cylons leave, but I don't really know if there's much of a story between when the Cylons leave and then when they return, because it's like, it's peacetime, it's the Pax Romana for these people on Caprica.
Well, so this is before the first war, though. This is during the development of the Cylons. So there'd be all that intrigue of, you know, debates about, you know, what's the fate of this technology, you know, and all
which
that.
Which is kind
of
interesting. But don't you think that with the Cylons, what's most interesting is the fact that the Cylons come back and they've developed technology themselves that allows them to be humanoid. Mm-hmm. And that's not going to be in existence during the show Caprica. During the show Caprica, it's just going to be right, I guess. But I like the fact that when you watch Battlestar Galactica, there are the robots still, who still exist, but then there's these robots who are these humanoid creatures who take on, you know, whatever it is, 9 different variants, 9 different models. But, you know, during this show, they're going to be developing, you know, these droids, but I'm not trying to question it. I'm sure that they'll be able to work some magic and hook me. I guarantee you they will. I am skeptical of what it is that the story is going to actually be.
You know what's going to be interesting is sort of what they're going to do for villains, because Battlestar Galactica obviously has its ultimate villain, you know, but this one, are they going to have like a, you know, are they going to have a set villain, like some corporation or something that's developing the Cylons, you know, and has sort of nefarious ideas about things, or is it just going to be like a different villain every week, you know?
Yeah, that's a good question, because we all know the ultimate villain will be the Cylons, but, you know, there is the lore of Battlestar Galactica where the Cylons were subservient to us and they did obey, you know, the humans on Caprica. I'm pretty sure that was the case, and then they rebelled finally once they had their own, you know, free will type thing. So that'll be interesting, but until that happens, the Cylons can't be the enemy. It can only be a foreshadowing of them becoming the enemy. So what is it going to be? Like this type of Cyberdyne Industries a la Terminator, you know, is that what's going to be the enemy, or is it going to be, like you said, yeah, are they going to have, like, a Lex Luthor type, this rich guy who's, you know, doing stuff, or is it going to be paramilitary forces who are going against, you know, the Captain Adama's, you know, whatever, you know, it's up in the air what it could be.
And who, I mean, there's even a bigger question here, who is going to be the hot chicks in this new series? I mean, they've got a lot to live up to.
Oh, God, yeah.
So,
there's four hot, you know what, in Battlestar Galactica, I will say Grace Park is hot. This isn't my hierarchy, I'm just saying. Grace Park, she plays, what's her face? I can't think of her name now. It's been so long since
the token Asian.
Yeah, the Asian girl, Katie Sackhoff as Starbuck, who I think is incredibly hot because of her ability to punch faces, and then the female the female Cylon. Can't think of her name, but I've seen her boobs online, which is awesome. And then the black girl who's just recently developing that relationship with Adama, with, do you know who I'm talking about? I can't think of her name, but I think she's hot too. So there's all these hot girls on that show. You know, the only way that, here, I'll lay it down right now, the only way they're going to top it is if Jennifer Connelly is in that show.
That would be awesome if she was in this.
It would be cool.
And Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah, Daniel Day-Lewis can play Mr. Greyhound.
Hey,
Greystone, or whatever they're called.
Here's a question for you. Where was Daniel Day-Lewis born? Do you know? Don't look it up.
Ireland.
Is that
He's not born in Ireland?
No.
Oh my gosh. If he was born in Detroit, Michigan, I'm going to go apeshit.
Because see, I didn't even think about this. I assumed he was American. And
he's
then
born
I was
in London, yeah, okay.
But then,
I knew he was from the UK.
But then that was brought into question, and he was born in London, which is...
Yeah.
I was sort of surprised, because I don't think he's got an English accent.
He, you know what, he does, but he beat the shit out of it so many times.
Yeah, with all the different accents he's taken on.
So he's fine, I think he's fine doing whatever. I mean, just look at this guy's goddamn filmography.
I just saw the unbearable lightness of being with him in it. So that's why I was thinking about him.
What'd you think of his performance?
He was great as all. I mean, he's never bad.
I'm just looking at, like, he's been in 24 films. My first time seeing him, though, was in The Bounty back in 1984, and he was a badass in The Bounty, and he wasn't even a main character. Mel Gibson and what's his face were main characters. Gosh, what's his name?
Anthony Hopkins.
You know, but he was awesome in that movie. I dare anyone to challenge Daniel Day-Lewis to acting.
Look at the film that's in production, There Will Be Blood.
Paul Thomas Anderson?
Yeah, what a combo.
It's an Upton Sinclair novel, though. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, and it's Paul Thomas Anderson directing and writing, and the only person on the cast so far is Daniel Day-Lewis.
He's attached, though. It says attached. Now, what that should mean is that he comes no matter what, and I hope that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the producers, these producers, especially Dan, Paul Thomas Anderson's film, so he's a good producer. He knows his stuff. He's been with PTA since the beginning.
There was always some speculation that Paul Thomas Anderson was done. That he was like sort of just disappeared, but I guess he's
well,
not.
He did disappear. I mean. Honestly, he's done nothing since he did Punch Drunk Love. If you look at his biography or filmography, it does show these things. But like Mattress Man commercial, that was part of the Punch Drunk Love DVD. You know, that was like an excerpt. It wasn't a thing that he did for TV. It was something he did to use in the movie. Because if you've watched a PTA movie, he'll film an entire game show and then splice that into the film. You know, he'll do stuff like that. So, I don't know what Blossoms in Blood was. That was a video of some sort.
He's really, I mean, he's carved for himself the perfect career where he can just, you know, he does what he wants, full creative control, then he can just sit back for like 5 years and do nothing without any pressure.
Yeah. Honestly, I almost feel bad for him because I think he is somewhat tortured And he said it himself. I don't know if he's gone on the record as of late as saying this, but, you know, if you look at his filmography, he did Cigarettes and Coffee, which is a good movie. I like it a lot. And he did Sydney, because after Cigarettes and Coffee, they gave him money to do Sydney. And then he right from Sydney, he got money to do Boogie Nights, wonderful film. And then he did Magnolia, and I know after Magnolia was done, because he is an artist in the truest sense. I mean, he finished Magnolia, and he said to himself, I don't know how I'll ever top this film, or if I ever will, but the you know, for him, he felt as though after Magnolia, he had made the perfect film, and his life was downhill from that. And I equated that to his statement after Depeche Mode played the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, and decided that was the crowning triumph of his life, and that no other moment would ever relate to it. And I can honestly say, on behalf of David Gahan, no moment has, except for DTE, when he made eye contact with me, and when we were in the audience at Pine Knob. That was the only other time, I think, in his life that he was able to equate that to being in Pasadena in 1989, or whenever that was. But for PTA, you know, Magnolia was his crowning achievement. And I liked Punch Drunk Love, but it was no Magnolia. So I think, I hope Blossoms, or I hope There Will Be Blood is something wonderful. And the fact that it's an Upton Sinclair novel and a DDL film, it should be good.
No, I don't really see how it couldn't be good, you know,
yeah.
with that sort of power.
Well, because, just before we end this, because you look at Daniel Day-Lewis, that's how I refer to him, you look at DDL, and he, like, when he did Gangs of New York, I liked Gangs of New York, but to be honest, it's not, like, the greatest film, it's not anything.
It's something fun to watch, but, you know.
Yeah, I won't watch it for another 5 years, probably, but it's a good film, but goddamn, Daniel Day-Lewis is good. I mean, he is spot on in that film. And I don't think there's ever been a film where he doesn't give 190,000,000% of his acting potential to it.
You know, really, the only thing that could ruin this upcoming Paul Thomas Anderson, Daniel Day-Lewis team-up would be Michael Clark Duncan.
You know what would enhance it entirely? Kurt Russell. Because I'll say this right now, Kurt Russell is one of the greatest actors of all.
Let's not bring up his IMDb and totally destroy that claim.
I'll just say, he's in the film Poseidon. I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, God.
Kurt Russell knows film, alright? He knows it inside and out, because he's acted in the worst of the worst, and he's acted in the best of the best. Whereas DDL has been spoiled his whole career as being a good actor in the first place. So that's all I'm saying is, you know, well, some of them had to make Overboard, you know. Others were blessed with, you know, making My Left Foot. So, anyway, all right, so that's that. What other topics do you have? We have time
for... We're done. It's 30. We're at 35 minutes.
We have time for one quick topic.
No.
One quick topic.
I've got it. Hey, I'm the one editing this.
Just one 2 minute topic. What can you say in 2 minutes?
Okay, here's the quick topic that there will be no discussion.
Okay.
Wes Anderson made an American Express ad.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I was when it first debuted, I was questionable. You know, I was like, what is he doing? You know, is he selling out? I watched it. I loved it. I mean, only Wes Anderson can make a commercial cool. So go on YouTube, type in Wes Anderson American Express ad, and you'll find it. It's really cool. It's got his total signature style, and it's funny. So
it's got Jason Schwartzman in it and the Indian guy that was in, what's it called? The last film he did, Life Aquatic. So it is awesome, though.
Yeah. So
all
there
right,
you go.
It's mini topic. See? It worked. All right. Well, that does it for podcast number 21 or 22 or whatever we're on. And we never have a closing. We never have a way to say goodbye, because it's so hard to say goodbye. Yesterday.
Peace out.
Later. For
You have been listening to This Just In, recorded and distributed for, I believe, the first time ever on the same day, Monday, May 15th, 2006. For more information about this podcast as well as other projects, including the journal, please go to www.the-means.com. I apologize for my gurgling and sickly sounding voice. I think, finally, the noxious fumes of the Los Angeles area are slowly killing me. Goodbye.
There's gotta be someone else.